Hello, you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. I am Cam, the program director at the station, and I'm coming to you live with a very, very special episode of radio. Right now, I'm joined on the phone by Rourke Tapp. Rourke Tapp has had a long career in radio that featured a stint here, a stint at CRSG, one of the two stations that preceded CJLO, about in 72, 73. Rourke, thanks for stopping by.
It's my pleasure, Cam. Good to hear that radio in the university is still alive and very well.
Yeah, it's the pandemic was a little difficult for, getting people involved. But thankfully, now that things have opened up a bit, I can safely say that the youth are still very much into radio and are very excited about being around the station. And but we're going to talk about like 50 years of radio in the of radio here on Concordia's campuses. And so Rourke, I want to talk a little bit about you at the beginning. So you had an entire career in radio. What was this? What kind of positions did you occupy over the course of your career?
Well, as with most people, when you're developing and nurturing a career, you try out a whole bunch of different things. I worked at CFCF-TV, and I worked at CFOX in Montreal when it was in Montreal, and CKGM, CJFM. So I made my way around, but I did start at CRSG. It was a great stepping off point and a learning. That's what universities are all about, is learning and developing what you're going to be when you get into the workforce. And it was a good opportunity for me, certainly, to get an understanding of how a radio company, because that's what radio is all about. It is a company, it's a service, it's a business in the commercial world. And it gave me an opportunity to understand how it works, and also gave me a little bit of a treat to get on air, play the music I wanted to, talk with like-minded people, and provide a service to the university. We, at the time, only hardwired into the public areas, so it was student unions and any of the restaurants or the collective areas for the university. And while I was there, it vaulted to being part of the cable industry, where we could be picked up on the early stages of cable back in the 70s, and people could listen to the radio station in their homes, unlike what you've got when we had been talking earlier. How fantastic it is that you guys can be picked up on online now, and anywhere in the world people can enjoy what you're doing. So I got my start in Montreal in the university, and kind of went on from there. I did find after bouncing around from different jobs in different radio stations, I found my niche in sales. And it was something that I got exposed to by being part of different radio stations and part of CRSG, where we had very, very limited sales. But I understood that was part of the lifeblood of the radio stations and the commercial ones, of course. That's how they keep going. And for the rest of my life, my career anyway, I worked in local sales. And then in national sales for companies where we served 450 radio stations from coast to coast. So that was that's where I spent my time.
Yeah. So I guess I should also say, before we dive back into your time at the station in particular, that this was all 50 years ago. So anything that happens on this radio on this hour of radio or so that we're going to be doing, take it with a grain of salt. This is 50 years of history.
And one of the things too, as we spoke about before, so many things that are done either in print or in modern television and radio, where everything is recorded, we certainly had audio tape back in the 70s, but it was very seldom that we would record a program. So any of the information was not written down and was, you know, sent off into the ether with the radio waves. And so it you have to rely on some individuals who might have taken notes at the time, or mostly on memories of guys that were there at the time. So it over time things tend to change in your mind, and you have either greater or lesser memories of some of the things. So you're right. 50 years, my memory might be not as good as it was back in the 70s.
So I want to start us off by going right back to the beginning. What exactly was the appeal for this of the station that got you involved there in the first place?
Well, I had worked at the newspaper called The Paper at Sir George, and the radio station was very close proximity to the paper, and I'd always had an interest in radio and broadcast in general, because I come from a broadcasting family. And I just wandered in one day and was talking to them, and the people were, as I said, very like-minded to you know, to the way I saw things. And I got an opportunity to do a radio show, and I grabbed it and found out that it was, first of all, a lot of fun, and second of all, it was an education in how things work. So it was fairly serendipitous, in as much as I, you know, made an introduction at the radio station and was accepted in, and I thank them for that.
Yeah, you mentioned that there that the people there were like-minded to you. What was this? What were the like characteristics of this like-mindedness that drew people at the radio station together?
Well, remembering that it was in the early 70s, and Woodstock had only been, you know, 3 or 4 years earlier, so that's a mindset as opposed to a social construct. And so people were very, I guess, laid back. The idea of university radio certainly wasn't very tense. It wasn't, you know, hard-pressed. It was pretty easygoing. And the people at the radio station were interested in serving the rest of the student community and bringing them information, good entertainment with the music of the day, and a little bit of conversation like we're doing right now, because radio is intensely personal. And it is something that can surpass a whole lot of things. I mean, television isn't as personal. Texting isn't as personal. People don't use telephones as much anymore. But the radio, if you listen to radio, it's yours. And you have a personal connection with it. In commercial, you choose the radio station that you feel suits your personality. So I found that with CRSG, the personality of the individuals, the idea of what the radio station was doing, serving the student community, was right up my alley. So it was a good relationship.
So you mentioned Woodstock there. I imagine that would have a huge influence on the kind of music that you would end up playing at the radio station.
No question. I mean, the spectrum of music at that time, you had oldies, which people would remember, which would be, you know, early 60s. Then the music tended to take a certain path. You had the, you know, the immense influence of the British invasion with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And then it got a combination too of folk, and then into folk rock. The you may have read about how people were, you know, just incensed when Bob Dylan went electric. And so you had a lot of these different conflicts in music, but you also had a very rich blend of different types of music to choose from. But unquestionably, you know, the point of Woodstock was to bring together heavy rock, some folk, some popular music, and some, you know, some pretty big headliners. So that influenced the music that people were listening to, and the people who are in their university years are hugely influential in choosing the music, helping the music develop, and making stars out of emerging artists, because they're the ones who tend to focus more on music and music that is current and you know, popular. So that's a big deal. But what we were playing was the music of the time of the day, and what we spoke about were the issues of the day. And I'm sure that that has not changed. Your radio station, I've tuned in on it, and you're talking about things that are important today, and introducing people to music of today. I've heard a large spectrum. We were talking about Metal March. There's some music there that I haven't heard before, and metal itself has changed over the years. I mean, it started quite a few decades ago, and it has matured, developed, and taken on some new stuff that nobody ever thought would happen. So that's all part of what the radio stations can do. In early days, you know, when you go back to the 50s, there were people who helped launch entire genres of music. There was a radio station in Windsor, Ontario, that broke Motown. So that's incredibly important. That's what, you know, ostensibly what radio does. The internet does it now. I mean, you could have a band and be on internet, whether it's TikTok, YouTube, or any of the other services, and just you know, launch. But it wasn't that long ago that the only way you got your name out there was through radio.
Yeah. Music labels and record companies still love sending us a bunch of CDs, but I can imagine because we're still one of the options for artists to get their name out there, but I can imagine when you were the only show in town, how much artists would love to hear themselves get played on radio, specifically campus radio, because of its connection to students.
And you hit it right on the head, because when you're trying to sell something, anything, any product at all, you want to figure out who your audience is, who's going to more effectively influence the rest of the population on your product. We have, you know, influencers on the internet now, but radio used to be the influencer. And you're darn right, the record labels would try and hit people who are going to be very influential in spreading the word about an artist or a group. And they are the ones who would, you know, make them popular enough to sell enough tickets to a show, a concert, or to, in those days, of course, buy a record, which doesn't happen a lot anymore, although there's a lot of downloads. It was a big deal, and you're right, campus radio was a big part of it. It didn't reach as many people as commercial radio, but man, the target group that they reached was highly, highly influential, and still is today, because these are the people who make decisions for tomorrow.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to touch on, you mentioned how the spoken word element of CRSG was very much focused around the political issues around that were cared about by, you know, around like Woodstock itself, because there was like a, I guess, a political element to Woodstock as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about like what some of those issues were that were like talked about a lot at CRSG at the time?
Well, universities have always been hotbed of political change. Many of the individuals who go on to be our political leaders and leaders around the world cut their teeth in university, whether it's, you know, political science or any other area of the university. So those are the things we talked about, the things of the day, as, you know, the history books have shown. The late 60s, early 70s were fraught with all kinds of things going on. There were conflicts. Vietnam was still a war that was being, you know, tortured by the Americans, and it was still a very popular subject. And at the time, there were, as universities will, they inspect what is going on in the world. They decide whether or not they want to participate in what's going on or want to change what's going on. And that's a very important part of discussion. And the radio stations at universities are able to have those discussions, whether it's a you know, an interview on air or even one individual's perspective on the world at large can help move a particular ideal, a certain way of thinking. And certainly in the early 70s, it was pretty tense. I mean, it's more tense today, but our focus was probably smaller at the time, although some of the issues were extremely worldwide. I don't think that they, some of the things that were going on then are a great deal different from what's going on now. You know, politics has always been, hopefully, to help the population that they serve, but it's also a bit of, you know, getting out there and doing more, whether it's good or bad. And I hesitate to get into any of the politics, but we, at the time, talked about what was important, the same as your station talks about the things that are important today to the individuals that are in a university and who are going to move on. We talked about how they have influence on you know, music trends. Well, these individuals in your university and universities around the world are going to be the next leaders, and if not, you know, the prime ministers and presidents, they'll certainly be part of what makes the world go round. So it's important to have those intelligent conversations on politics, because, like it or not, they will always be there, and they, being the politics, that is, influence your life, my life, and everybody else we live around. So that long-winded explanation is that people in university do talk about politics, and the radio station is a fabulous way to get that word out.
That's right. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is a very, very special episode of radio that we're doing here today. I have Rourke Tapp on the phone. Rourke Tapp has had a long career in radio that began at CRSG, the Sir George Williams Radio, one of the predecessors of CJLO, and we're talking radio over the course of the last 50 years. Rourke, once again, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. I'm also very happy to hear that you have some ads on CJLO. It many people don't appreciate advertising, and some of them are a little PO'd at hearing interruptions like that, but from a guy who's spent his entire working career, or most of it anyway, in advertising, mostly on radio, I can tell you that as much as radio can influence music genre, information on, you know, news, weather, sports. It's also an important part of getting the word out on what's available, how to, you know, who are the people that can offer certain products and services to you. And although not 100% of the ads you hear are for you, because you may not be interested in, you know, new windows or yoga, as you heard before, but it opens your mind to, you know what, maybe I'd like to try that, or yeah, I was looking to get into that, and it's part of the information, not, you know, not to miss the other most important part. It is the lifeblood of a commercial radio station, and I'm sure it helps CJLO as well. There's my commercial for commercial radio. How about that?
Yeah, it definitely does help us a lot here. Advertising is obviously still a huge part of the station, and it's really nice because the kind of advertising we do is mostly for very hyper-local stuff that appeals specifically to students. So we often don't get the big corporate ads. Instead, we get just, you know, people looking to promote their shows, you know, just say what's in town. And I really like the fact that the advertising, at least for us, ends up being so targeted specifically to students.
So, isn't that radio?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a part of radio that gets to the population. I mean, we've been through all kinds of different information sharing instruments over the years, whether it's a, you know, a piece of paper nailed to a lamppost to inform people to, you know, to the way the internet and television and radio work today. But it's all about sharing information and getting information to people on, you know, numerous subjects. But I'll tell you, local radio without it, I think that society would be in a worse position because it tells you about what's happening in your life. Yes, sometimes the big national stuff is it can seem to be a little bit less personal, but certainly radio and specifically university radio really gets to the people, and I think that's one of its real blessings. I mentioned earlier that people take a real personal view of their radio station. And although people might listen to a couple of different stations or, you know, a couple of different services online, they have a real affinity to and a real personal attachment to local radio. I think that's its magic.
Yeah, it's amazing that we get to be so focused on particularly Montreal because, you know, the most of the students that do our programming, they don't really, of course, there's international issues that they care very deeply about, but their lives and their personal lives are mostly based around things happening in Montreal. And it's amazing that it's that which is the focus and gets discussed because that's not something you can get from, I guess, the bigger national level media sources.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you get to the some of the grittier things that are going on in our world, I mean, you happen to live in one of the most wonderful cities in the entire world, and within a province that is extremely focused on not losing a culture. And, you know, looking at what is being focused on today is the, you know, their desire to keep the French language in Quebec, and it's very understandable, and it's a cultural, a social thing, but in the broader aspect, and with you specifically, CGLO specifically, you're keeping a culture alive as well. You're keeping the culture of the university, the understanding of what's important to the people who spend a great deal of money getting an education at the university and are going to, as I said before, get off and literally run the world later. And it's something that you're cultivating for them, a feeling for their city. because Montreal is certainly, and it's been extolled as one of the most international cities on the globe, and that's an important thing to, you know, to nurture. And I think that you're doing your part. I mean, the radio station in keeping that culture alive.
Yeah, it's I think, like, as a collective project between, I guess, me as program director and all the DJs, it's one of the things is, like, the student culture at Concordia, and maybe you can talk about what the student culture was at, like, back in the 70s, but the student culture here is very vibrant and very activist focused, very much so. The students come from more working class backgrounds compared to McGill. And I think that like that combination of stuff really produces like a unique radio that appeals specifically to the kind of students that end up going to Concordia.
And that's what's going to happen because you are the radio station is a product of the people who run it. The people who participate in it and the people who listen to it. The organization is extremely important and the service is extremely important. And you're right. You're going to have the voice, you're going to have the attitude of all of the people that are involved in putting it together. You listen to any other commercial broadcasting, and it's an agglomeration of all of the people who have, you know, put their words into it, put their ideas into it. Just think of all the different stations that you've sampled, whether TV, radio, or even online, and you can pick out the differences. This one is different because it looks at things this way, more conservatively, more liberally. Communally, whatever their attitudes are, but it's all a directive and really a reflection of the people who put it together. But the understanding that in the 70s we had Loyola and we had Sir George Williams, those two were very distinct and different. I went to Loyola High School, so I understood the culture that Loyola pervaded throughout, whether it was the high school or the university. It had been influenced for decades, and even up to the time I was there, by the Jesuit priests. And that gives you a different culture as well. Sir George Williams was, we were in what we used to call the office building, because it was a multi-storied building that looked like any other office building in Montreal, whereas Loyola was truly a campus, a great deal of land, very wonderful architectural buildings, and so the once again the culture and the attitude is going to be different. Although Sir George was in an office building, there was a certain mentality. I mean, in the late 60s, you may have read about the computer wars, where people were throwing computers out the window at Sir George, and they were smashing down on de Maisonneuve and throwing out the key cards, which you probably haven't read about because they're 3-inch by 10-inch cards with punch holes in them that we used to run in the computers, and this was a form of protest because of what was going on in the world, in the university, et cetera. It was the 70s was a time of protest. People felt, as there is still a world of protest today, where specifically university students looked at things that were going on and said, no, this isn't right. It's not the way I want my world to be, you know, when I get out there to do my work, whatever it's going to be. So we need to change it. The cultures were different. certainly from Loyola to Sir George. And I think that the amalgamation of the two is a wonderful thing. I think what you guys have got is a fantastic culture, because you get to look at both of them. Sir George was extremely well known for computers and engineering. It was an entirely different, school compared to Loyola. Loyola was more classics, more classical, the arts, and although there were wonderful other avenues for people to learn as well, the spectrum was full and open. But with the combination of the two into Concordia University, I think it brought the best of both worlds, and I think your spectrum is broadened, if that's a way to look at it, and I think that it too would probably carry down into the radio station, where you would have a broader look at the different things that are going on in the world, and that is hopefully what university is about, to get a better perspective, and it's going to show up in the radio station.
So you talked a little bit about how the radio stations and the voice in general is like an amalgamation, is an amalgamation of the individual parts and the individual DJs. I want to talk a little bit about your specific radio show on CRSG, and what were you doing? What were you spinning?
Well, it was once again, it was a time where we were able to, as DJs, play our own music. If it wasn't exactly what the radio station wanted, you'd have the discussions, but nothing was there was no forced programming. So I played the music of the day as I enjoyed it. As I said, there were all kinds of genres of music. But I played everything from, Dylan to Richie Havens, through the band, through Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, a lot of the artists that were popular of the day, probably on the smoother side, as opposed to the hard rock and any of that. Disco had not, thankfully, reared its ugly head just yet when I was there, so didn't have to not play that. But the music that I played was pretty mellow, and the conversations were pretty mellow as well. My show was on from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, so students had been to all of their, the morning classes and a whole ton of the afternoon classes, and they were probably, chilling, getting ready for the evening, assembling their notes, and so it was easier to kick back with the type of music that I was playing, and it was comfortable for me, and I think the people that did tune in enjoyed the more mellow feel to the late afternoon.
Yeah, late afternoon programming is I've done some of that in the past, and it's some of my favorite programming, just because you can't you don't have to do the hustle and bustle of morning, but also I guess late night has a particular flavor too. But laid back afternoons, it sounds like some great programming.
Well, it's easy, and understanding too that our audience, my audience, your audience, isn't necessarily stuck in morning drive or in drive home the same way as the greater population will. Driving to and from a job, although school hours are reasonably close to business hours, we've got evening classes, you've got midday classes, and so you might not be tuned into the same thing. So the idea of traffic reports is moot. You know, you don't really care because you're not traveling at the same time as somebody else. And certainly today, there's a lot better, you know, whether it's Waze or even Google, to understand how you're getting to and from, where you're getting to and from. You know, you're too late if you're doing a traffic report half an hour later. So those things are not of interest to our audiences, yours and mine in time gone by. And so what they're looking for was, you know, help me chill if it's the end of the day, help me, you know, collect my thoughts, entertain me, and speak to me. Talk to me about things that are going on, because you know, I'd like to be informed while being entertained. So it's university radio is different from commercial radio in mostly because of who they're talking to.
So I want to at the station in general, what were some other shows that you remember being like at different parts of the schedule? What kind of things were going on in the morning? What were there any cool shows that you listened to?
Well, I would have the station on when we got it with cable. I lived about, 100 yards from the from Sir George on Mackay Street, and I hooked us up to cable, and I would have it running literally all day. We, you know, my roommates made me shut it off at night when everybody was sleeping, but we listened to it all day. So you'd pretty well get the gamut. And as far as the shows were concerned, there were ones that played similar music to what I was playing. Some of the guys had different tastes. There were women that had different tastes as well, and it really came down to the individual who was running the show. And because there was a pretty large group of individuals who wanted to participate in the radio station, like my show was only a couple of days a week, because there were a lot of other people who understandably wanted to participate as well. So it wasn't, you could tune in at 3 and hear my show any day. You might hear somebody who was playing some jazz, or somebody who was playing really hard rock, or somebody who was, we even had one group that was, lady who would play some classical music, because that's what she was into. So it was a real gamut of music, and you could tune in any time. And even if it wasn't your particular taste, you might learn something. You might find another group who, and I did that with many of them, and they would say, okay, this particular act is coming to Montreal. And I went, oh, cool. And then maybe, you know, drop into the forum and listen, because that was the venue. The Montreal Forum was the biggest venue for art. Sir George had a couple of theaters as well, and we listened to a whole bunch of different artists. Gordon Lightfoot had shown up, and he did an interview, of course, on CRSG, not with me, but with somebody else. And Blind Melon came down. He had their blues and New Orleans, not quite jazz, but blues. And so a lot of artists who came through were played on the radio station, and it helped enrich the community. But I'll tell you, there was a wide spectrum. And although you guys have music directors, we kind of had music guides. We had individuals at the radio station who would sometimes, you know, help or supply music to you Yeah, if you were, you know, if you're looking for it. So it was pretty broad, and I got introduced to some terrific music by other DJs at the station because they introduced me to it.
CJLO. You're listening to CJLO, 1690 AM, and we're talking, we're in the back little portion of this very special episode talking about CRSG, one of the radio stations that preceded CJLO, and what it was like back in the 70s. On the phone, I have Rourke Tapp, who was a afternoon DJ for CRSG, and we've been talking just about, before the break, we were talking a little about the music selections. And Rourke, I was curious, what was the connections like between, the scenes where you go, the Montreal music scene, like going to shows, and the DJs at the station?
Well, the it was, I'll say loose, the connections. Everybody made their own connections, and not everybody strove to get into it. Make no mistake about it. Donald Tarleton, Donald K. Donald, who was the major impresario of the day, would make sure that his staff had connections with CRSG, because he understood that the community, the university community, was a huge part of the concert goers, and so they would make those connections. He, as an impresario, had the ability to connect any of the media with some of the artists. At the same time that I was at CRSG, as I mentioned, I also worked at the paper. And we would use our connections collectively to go to different artists' concerts. And we thankfully got an opportunity to interview them backstage before the concert. And I can remember a couple of times being able to, you know, take a tape recorder and take a photographer. And we'd, you know, the photographer would take pictures for the paper, and I would record for the radio show. And in that way, we served both the newspaper and the radio station to be able to communicate the information to our group. And it was highly beneficial. There were others that did it as well. And Montreal at the time, and today too, attracts some fabulous artists. And because certainly at that time, there weren't as many avenues to advertise and get the word out, because there was no internet. The radio station, the whole radio station group in Montreal, whether commercial or at CRSG, it was important to get that word out. And so, I mean, that was a big part of the fun. You know, you get to interview some of the acts that were coming to town. And so that was the integration. And it primarily, I mentioned, you know, Donald K. Donald, because he was the super impresario of the day. He brought absolutely every act that was going to Montreal. So
I want to talk a little bit about the structure of the radio station itself. So things have, I think, changed a little bit. I'm full-time staff here at the station. There's another person who's on staff full-time. And we have a bunch of part-time staff as well. But from what I understand, things were, there weren't that many staff around CRSG in the 70s.
Well, let's put it this way. They were skeleton of the station, because there were fewer people, but they held the body together. There was a station manager. There certainly was a program director, or somebody in charge of making sure all the shows happened. you know, lassoing all the crazy DJs into actually showing up and making sure they were prepared and do a show. So although it seemed like it had less structure, it was those individuals, whether they were employed by the station, and I really don't know I can't remember or didn't know what the structure was. The way that the radio station was paid for was dues from the student body, and I'm not too certain, but I'll bet it's the same thing today. A certain portion of dues goes to the different services offered, but although the structure of the station was, I guess, in appearance, a little less like a well-run unit, it was a well-run unit, and it was all because of the management, although they probably didn't really see themselves as, tough management. They just made sure everything worked, and they did. So that's the magic of it. They were able to make a radio station run without appearing like a military unit. And I'll bet you guys run the same way. You seem as though you've got a firm hand on the ship's rudder, to use an old term, but you don't push anybody around.
Yeah, it's actually that from what you said, it sounds like things have changed very, very little as far as station structure goes. The DJs here still get to pick their own music. I might chime in occasionally, be like, hey, I noticed you're playing the same kind of Canadian music to hit our Canadian requirements over and over. You know, maybe try some of this stuff out instead. But for the most part, DJs get to run the show here still.
But I think you've hit it right on the head there, Cam. The fact is that university radio is an exceptional entity. And it hasn't changed because the ideals haven't changed. You've got students who want to learn, who want to perform in some way, who want to share their ideas, share their music. And as the old folks say, 'twas it ever thus. You've got people who are enthused about the medium of radio, who want to participate in it. And it was that way in the 70s. And from what I have from conversations with you, it's the same way today. Individuals who are beginning or are already in the throes of their love of the medium of radio. And it's something that I think is going to continue on, and it's going to continue on in the pretty much the same way, because there are people who are enthusiastic, who are focused on doing what radio does best, and that's entertaining, informing, instructing people in the world that they can touch.
And I think that, I guess, the story of this hour is that radio hasn't changed that much. I was very, very happy to see over the course of the year that I've worked here how much people just entering university are like full of pure enthusiasm about joining a radio station, getting a show, or even just like helping out behind the scenes with some of our like archive management or stuff like that. And it's just I don't know. I think maybe there's something about radio that makes that desire to get involved last over time.
You've struck it. That's exactly what it is. It's something that gets into your blood, and it's something that is probably intrinsic to certain individuals, whether they're creative or even business. It's something that that helps. Kind of convey who they are, and I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, so I guess if you're tuning in and listening and you've ever wanted to get involved with radio, get involved at CJLO. We're always looking for new content. Just a little self plug here, so Rourke,
my resume.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Rourke, we're coming to the end. Is there anything that you want to talk about that we haven't touched on?
I don't think so. All that I would say is that I wish you the very best of future, I don't know whether it's luck or just good wishes, because I think what you're doing is extremely important, and I think the people who are fortunate enough to participate in CGLO are going to carry that with them really forever. It'll be a part of their university experience. They'll carry on, and with any luck, they might even become part of the communications industry. So good for you, and I thank you and your other administrators for making sure that it continues at CGLO.
Yeah, well, you've been listening to CJLO 69 AM. Rourke, thanks so much for joining me. This has been a great episode. You'll be able to catch this online. We'll be posting it around. So if you miss part of the hour, you know.
It'll help people go to sleep, right?
No. Absolutely not. I think we're going to go out with just a tiny bit of music. I got, you mentioned the band earlier, and I'm going to play The Wait.
Good man.
All right, here it is.
Thanks so much.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half-past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand, no was all he said. Take a load off, Fanny. Take a load for free. Take a load off, Fanny. And you put the load right on. Picked up my bag, I went looking for a place to hide. When I saw Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around. Take a load off Fanny. Take a load for free. Take a load off Fanny. And you put the load right on.